All right, guys, we're back. Another episode of the Mets Up Podcast. We're not doing the intro again because you want to know why? Last week, great numbers. Granted, it might be because the season just started and there's actually something to give a shit about, but the boys are back ready to talk about some baseball against the Detroit Tigers. The Mets finally got their first win of the season, which I'm super happy about because if they didn't, I was going to have to drink beer through a hot dog straw, which I still might do for the banter. I think that's just good content. Maybe if you guys drop enough likes on this YouTube video, I'm going to say this, 200 likes on the YouTube video, I'll still do the hot dog straw with the beer. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I did just come back from going out, so I am a little bit like James was a couple weeks ago, but we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk some baseball here. And James, much better location, much better connection. I feel like we're back because you've got another random painting behind you. What's going on in Italy?
What's up, everybody? Still checking in from Italy. I'm in Milan right now with my family. Sister's running a marathon on Sunday, so here supporting. I'm in such a weird old-timey Airbnb. There's paintings everywhere. There's such weird shit in this Airbnb. I have a bunch of pictures. I need the Mets to win a game because you can't post like weird things in my Airbnb part one if the Mets are 0-6. So like, thank God the Mets won today. I'm going to post it this afternoon because there's strange figurines and masks and pictures and all this weird, bizarre shit that's you can only find and get away with in like a strange Italian Airbnb. Eighth stair walk up with a bunch of bags and luggages.
What?
Yeah, it was a struggle the other day, but like weird China cabinets and strange desks and lamps, but there's a television and we have an internet connection. So we're watching Mets baseball and overall it's been a very fun trip. And it's been strange for all this Mets stuff to be going on where like I'm watching the games, but like luckily one's been during the daytime, two been during the daytime, last two games. And I could just watch them in the evening. And the other one, game one, waking up early in the morning to watch, but almost a little happy to be slightly disconnected from Mets world for this last week.
Yeah, it has been a good week to miss because, as we know, the Mets are currently 1-5, right? 1-5, that's the record, going yes. into their next series. And it was a pretty miserable start game one. Now, some positives out of game one. Sean Manaea looked phenomenal. Like, he looked great. Talk about, like, the pitching has not really been the issue per se. Sean Manaea looked awesome. Brett Beatty looks great. Like, there's a lot of things to take out of it, but that one really, really hurt. That was one of the ones I think that got a lot of Mets fans going because, okay, the Brewers series sucked, whatever, move on. We're going up against the Tigers. We know they're a better Tigers team than they have been in the past. And with a guy pitching well on the mound, you go, okay, Mets have a real shot here. But again, the offense, which has been the story of the season thus far, has just been relatively non-existent, and it was again in game one.
Manaea was great. I think Manaea is a good lesson for Mets fans, baseball fans, that doesn't always have to look the same when a pitcher is going to pitch well. We talk a lot about in the show and like other baseball people, Twitter, the yada yada, about like having these like writhing fastball. You hear the word IVB a lot recently, the last like year plus, where Manaea does something that's completely the opposite. His fastball just runs like so much and on guys and into guys, especially as a lefty into the righties. So just having a fastball that's like very weird, like weird enough that's going to catch hitters off guard. He just played that so well and was so good with it. And he was so in control, and like having a nice big lefty on the mound, just breaking off these changeups, and has his little cutters, and he was like using these weird cutting fastballs high in the zone, low in the zone. He was amazing. But again, just the offense is anemic. Even winning the game on Thursday, the offense is still non-existent. It's terrible. It doesn't even feel like it's getting at all better anytime soon. Yeah. And most of that's because of Nimmo and Lindor, and we'll talk about them a lot. But like the only positives to take from this game on Monday was the fact that, again, the pitching was great. The bullpen was great throughout. The only bullshit that happened was because of defense. I feel like I don't even blame Michael Tonkin. We'll talk about some weird decisions that led to the bad defense. But big story this week, while Francisco Alvarez is like taking over and looking like might be the Mets' best player, which is an insane thing to think about. Brett Beatty, too. Brett Beatty, the slow dribble of confidence that keeps coming from him, defense to offense, defense to offense. He weirdly had the two hardest hit balls in the whole game on Monday. But it's just there's very much a different feeling with him in the field right now at the plate, just as a baseball player. And I think that's something that we've been talking about a lot and something that everybody can get behind because you can see it and it's real and it's happening.
Yeah, Brett talked about it apparently with Gary. They talked about it in the first game of the doubleheader. Really good quip, really good clip there. And Gary was saying that Brett this offseason said one of the things he focused on the most was his mental game. And that's something that both me and you noticed last year was, might be taking those bad plays in the field with him at the plate. And then the bad at-bats back with him back into the field. Like, it didn't seem like he was ever particularly comfortable to be a major leaguer. And he goes to Gary during spring training if I am given the third base job coming out of spring training, which of course he has been, he goes, that means I am one of the 30 best third basemen in the entire world. He goes, so yeah, I belong here. Like, this isn't a problem of like, if I'm good enough, if I have what it takes. He goes, at the end of the day, what am I? The 28th best third baseman in the entire planet in terms of playing baseball. And I think that alone right there is going to be the thing that separates Brett Beatty from where he was last year, because we know talent-wise, we know physically, he has all the tools to be a very good player. There's no way he's just going to forget how to hit, forget how to play third base. But the confidence had been what's lacking, and now it seems like he is at least more confident than he was in the past. I'm not going to say he's Francisco Alvarez, who's just dripping with testosterone. That guy's a fucking dog. I love Francisco. But Brett Beatty hitting fifth in the lineup now, like, I don't really want to move him out of there. He's having great at-bats, playing good defense. Everything that we could have wanted out of Brett Beatty is like slowly happening, and I think Mets fans should be really excited.
Yeah, she had fourth game two on Thursday, too, just with Francisco Alvarez getting half of a day off, which was a decision that Carlos Mendoza got a little bit lucky that that didn't come back to bite him as bad as could have. But everything with Beatty, and you mentioned the defense, the offense, the offensive defense, like, this is exactly the game plan that killed him last year, where he would make a bad play in the field and he'd go to the box and he'd take it with him. And then he'd have a bad at bat, take it back to the field, boot the ball, where he's making such good plays on defense.
Such good.
There was a play on Thursday where he charged the Spencer Torkelson swing bunt, and he actually didn't even get him out, but it was like a beautiful bare hand play where he broke immediately, took three steps and whizzed a sidearm throw and just bang, missing by like a half a step because it hit so slowly. He made a great diving play in the Jorge Lopez 10th inning against the line on a line drive. He's going to be going towards the line, away from the line, in on the ball, back in the ball.
He made the plate where
the plate was awesome.
He kind of knocked it down, and Keith and Ron were like, shout out to Brett Beatty getting in front of that ball. If he doesn't get in front of it, he's not able to make that play. And then he threw a strike home. They threw him out at the plate, was able to limit the run, limit the damage. Like, he's been able to make big plays when we need him. And granted, they're not the Pete Alonso home runs, the Francisco Alvarez driving in two RBIs like on a single hit, but he's been moving the line. He's been playing good on both sides. That's really all we can ask for from Brett Beatty right now.
I'm also 99% sure he actually leads the team in RBIs.
Nice. All right. Good.
Saying, yeah. Because game one on Thursday, he had a great two out little dinky single off a lefty with two strikes, which is he served it over the third baseman's head. And I was like, I don't think 2023 Brett Beatty does that. And he also had a moment to end game two where he scores the game winning run. Who was pitching? Was it Will Vest? Was it Fajedo still? Was it Alex Fajedo? I think it might have still been Alex Fajedo who gave up the runs. The Mets made look like Matt Brash. Monday night, Alex Fajedo, the Tigers doing that great thing right now in like player development, like team development, where they've had this run of starters come to the major leagues and not be that good. But you know what they've done? They've been like, okay, you guys just be relievers now because we're a good baseball team. That's what we need you to be. So they've
the Marlins, where AJ Puck, you were a great reliever. What if you start again? Oh shit, you're terrible. Now what?
You're giving AJ Puck too much shit for that start the other day. He settled in. He looked good. He'll be a good starter still. But like, Joey Wentz, Alex Fajedo, just go to the bullpen and just like be good relievers for us. Like, we want you to only pitch 30 pitches at a time, so just throw gas. And Alex Fajedo, Monday, he looked like the best reliever in baseball. He was breaking off fastballs and sliders, and I was just like, what the hell? Like, Harrison Bader and Pete Alonso played with him in college and looked so stupid in their at-bats to them. So thank God Pete got the one off him on Thursday, because I was just like, I thought you guys knew this guy. Like, why does this look so bad? But
it's not hard to make Harrison Bader look like a bad hitter right now, though. That guy is genuinely one of the five worst hitters in baseball that I've seen in a while.
Bad. But then Beatty, when we got the shot back against him on Thursday, after the Pete home run, like, emotions high, like, we've tied the game, like, pressure's off. But Brett Beatty works a really good walk where the umpire called two pitches to Brett Beatty strikes. Both of them were below his knees. They were so bad. I have a screenshot on the MLB.com. I might throw it into the video so you guys can see it, but such bad pitches. And there were so many other times in the series where Brett got called for some shit strikes. Yeah. There was another check swing where he barely went through the zone. They gave him a strike without a feeling. I was like, what the hell? And every time it was like he made a comment, like he said something to the umpire, but it didn't look like he was doing it in like a bitchy or a whiny way, but he stayed in his at-bat. And this one, he stayed in the at-bat, and he wound up still working the walk and coming around to score the game-winning run, where it's just like having him in the middle of the order right now, being a player that's useful, that's effective, is changing everything. And I think as this season has gone, J.D. Martinez is going to play this weekend. I think Sunday is the day right now. He's going to slot into four. Alvarez is going to slot into five. And I would be remiss if Brett Beatty did not slot into six, because right now there aren't many hitters in the Mets lineup having better at bats consistently than Brett Beatty. I don't want him to be hitting it's great, like behind Starling Marte or Jeff McNeil, based on the way those guys are hitting either. Like, especially everything that Beatty can do, will do, and should be doing. Like, he's producing right now is a way that I don't know anyone else this team maybe can besides the other top guys.
Yeah, in game one, I think I texted you. He like worked a walk where he took a bunch of really close pitches. Game one of the doubleheader. And I was like, great fucking at bat from Brett Beatty. I'm like, this is the kind of stuff that makes me feel good about these takes that we've now been having for like almost 2 years, where it's like, we told you guys, like, it was even great. Like, Wardy, shout out Wardy. You guys know him, Mets content creator, texted me. He's like, look at Beatty. He's like, your guy is starting to show it a little bit. I'm like, yeah, I know. We don't just say this stuff to shout it into the void. Like, especially now, there's no reason for us to promote propaganda. We can say the truth about everything that we're talking about here. And I still feel the same way about Brett Brady, and you're starting to see it. So those are some of the positives for sure. Pete had that big home run, quickest Met ever to 500 RBIs in Mets history. He seemed really proud of that. I'm sure he'd like to continue on breaking some of those records. But there's a lot of still bad going on with this team right now. And especially on the offensive side, it seems like 90% of the time they don't really have a clue what's going on at the plate. And the two guys that feel the most locked in, I'll say three, Alonso, Alvarez, Beatty. Everybody else kind of seems like they don't know what's going on. Marte has looked fine. I'm not going to say anything about him. He's hit the ball hard, hit and tossed some hard outs. Like, he's swinging the bat. He looks healthy. But everybody else, like, Nimmo looks just lost. Francisco Lindor looks like he's a shell of himself right now. Jeff McNeil, I don't know what's going on there, but he looks like someone who's not even like really competing for a starting spot right now. If there was someone pushing up on his heels, he's playing horrendously bad. Don't get me started on Harrison Bader. So horrible at the plate. There's just like a lot of holes right now offensively. And that's part of the reason why this team is not able to score runs, is because this lineup is so disconnected right now.
Yeah, there were a lot of times Lindor came up, especially during the doubleheader with a man on base. Because Nimmo, as bad as he looks hitting, the contact is poor, but I think he walked 4 or 5 times during the doubleheader. So at least he's doing the thing that we really need him to do, which is get on base. And then Lindor will come to the plate and just look at strike one, swing at strike two, swing at strike three. You're like, what the fuck are you thinking, dude? And it's like, it's hard to blame Francisco Lindor because we've seen how good he is. But then it's like he goes through these streaks and it's like, what the actual fuck is going on now? And now the animals on Twitter are getting some red meat and they're coming back to the top. The 10% of rabid weird ass Mets fans are coming back, where it's like, you see, I told you about this guy, which is like, it's not true, but it's also like, yeah. The other thing is, like, I was having a conversation with my cousin Mets group chat, and because I would say that watching Pete at bat in, at bat out, I would still say he's struggling as well. But the difference with a guy like Pete and a guy like Francisco Lindor is that when Pete's struggling, he can do what he did on Thursday and still basically accidentally win you a game, swing the bad pitch, 3-quarter swing, get the bat on it, and hit 150 miles an hour for a home run, like, just accidentally. Whereas if Lindor is not in the zone right now, or like, even worse, way out of the zone is not even in his periphery, like, just he can't really do anything at the plate to help you win, because that lefty swing is so loopy and so long,
so bad right now.
He had a fastball in the inner half and one, I think, a second last at bat on game two, and he hit a fastball middle in. Lefty, he had a cue shot past the third base, foul down the line. I was like, how do you even do that? Yeah. And the pop-ups on high and inside pitches, and he's just late on everything. And it looks like he changed his swing a little bit. He's like more upright, and he's like a little more closed. And it's like, why'd you change anything? Like, you were doing so good. And I don't know. Now we're going on like 3 straight Aprils where Francisco Lindor just can't really hit. So maybe it's an April thing. Maybe it's he had a bad spring training too, like a really bad spring training where he didn't. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not like worried about Francisco Lindor, but I just want him to hit well, because this Mets team won't play well if he doesn't hit well, especially him and Brandon Nimmo. Like, and those are your top two hitters. They need to get on base. They need to be like moving around the bases. If those two aren't hitting, it's very hard for the team to score runs, as we're seeing. We talked about how top heavy this lineup was all offseason, but we were okay with it because 1, 2, 3 was that good. If 1 and 2 suck, it's not that good. It's really bad, actually. It's terrible. And then it's getting compounded by the fact that there are some weird things happening with Carlos Mendoza. Yeah. I'm not going to blame the guy in his first. He's only managed now 6 games as major league manager, but it seems like he's kind of squeezing the lineup card a little tight. And we talked about it last week, and you dismissed it, because I was like, there's some like very small, weird decisions here being made where if there were closer games or if things were more tight, like, these would be magnified. And we saw a lot of these decisions happen this Tiger series, where the first one, I text you, it made me so irrationally mad, because just like, it's very simple lineup management where there was no explanation behind it. I couldn't figure it out. So I think it was the 5th or 6th inning. It was similar to the Zach Short, Brett Beatty lefty situation from last Saturday.
I think it might have even been the 7th, actually.
I think it was. But Joey Wendell's lineup spot comes up with a man on first and one out. and I don't remember who was up at the time, but Jeff McNeil comes out in the on deck circle for Joey Wendell to get the at bat, which Joey Wendell has a lot of faults to ball player. He's a good fielder. He seems like a good locker room guy. He actually hit the ball hard a couple of times on Thursday, but I don't think he's exactly the guy you want on the base. I mean, I play with the game on the line. Jeff McNeil comes out. But then I think the hitter might have been Marte, gets out. So now instead of a man scoring position with two outs, so just a man at first with two outs. So then Carlos Mendoza pulls Jeff McNeil back and sends Joey Wendell out to still hit. Joey Wendell, of course, like strikes out on three pitches. So then that happens. So now you say Jeff McNeil. Gary's like, okay, well, you know, you have Jeff McNeil as your best bench hitter. You want to save him for an RBI spot. Okay, I guess that makes sense. And Joey Wendell stays out there. And then the next inning, or maybe a full time around the order. So maybe this was the six, because I had to go full time around the order, because then Harrison Bader came up with a man on first and also two outs or one out later in this game. And then Jeff McNeil goes out to hit. And you're like, that was the exact same situation. And then to make matters worse, once we got to the 10th inning of this game in a 0-0 game, really tightly contested game, now you don't have your best outfield defender in the game. The guy you're only playing for outfield defense because he can't hit a lick. And then Joey Wendell's second base. And Joey Wendell makes a bad error at second base on a ground ball at Cole Keith and winds up spurning the entire Tigers rally to wind up losing this game for the Mets. Again, you don't lose a game on one error late in the game, but it's just that kind of weird indecisiveness from the manager. And we saw it more so again the game one of the doubleheader with the Tiger series. It's just like, these are the little things where I'm like, I'd like to all these. Maybe I'm perfectionist. That's just me. I want really good decisions all the time for my baseball coach. But it's just like these little process things where I'm just like, that didn't feel that good. Oh, that didn't feel that great. And I'm even watching this game was so frustrating for me because like I texted Mark. I was like, hey, I'm gonna wake up early and watch this game. I have MLB TV. I'm not unlocking my phone when I wake up. My dad and I are gonna sit down in the morning and we're gonna just watch this game. We're gonna get ready for the day. We're gonna put the game on. And I turned spoilers off on MLB TV, which is a cool feature they have. I don't remember them ever having that, so I would never not see any box score scoreboards. But the only thing you can see when you turn on a game is the time of game. And I saw 2 hours and 58 minutes. So I was like, okay, long game, probably a lot of offense. And then it's going to the third inning, the fourth inning, the fifth inning, the sixth inning. I'm like, where the fuck is the offense? How's this game not happening right now? And I'm like, oh, and I was going to go to the extra innings. And then once it was 0-0 in extra innings, I was like, the Mets are going to fucking lose this game because this is a long inning in extra innings. It's not the home team winning. There's just no way. So once we get to that 10th inning, I see fucking Carson Kelly smash one to the night sky. I was like, all right, great. This is awesome. But, oh, God, I also do my own home for a second. Sometimes I give you guys these pitcher scouting reports before these series in the preview. Sometimes I'm a little bit off. Wow. Reese Olson, Shelby Miller, Jason Foley throwing the demon sinkers.
That is nasty.
The Tigers got some fun pitchers. And thank God these stupid Rams. We missed Tarik Skubal. Thank God.
I know.
We would have gotten no hit for sure. But
yeah, oh, for sure.
It was a miracle. Just fun. This Tigers team is a fun little baseball team. It looks like they're a good shot to make a playoff run, one of my bold predictions. And I really don't want to play them anymore.
No. And also with the rainouts that were going on too. Not cool that the Mets did not announce game two as a rainout way earlier. So people came and paid for parking, went into the stadium, paid for stuff, like spent all that money to then, there was never a chance. You haven't been here. It had been raining nonstop for like 48 hours. Like they were like, oh, there's a window. Window for what? Six pitches? Like, what'd you think you were going to get half an inning in? Like, I couldn't believe. And the Mets have been good being proactive in the past of calling games early. So the fact that they didn't call this one against the Tigers on Tuesday early was so bizarre to me. You even saw Gary with a legendary all-time meme doing like the crazy intro for SNY, basically like pretending as if, oh, there might be a game. And then as soon as it cuts, I don't know why that was shown, but he completely was like, oh. He did like a legendary eye roll of like, basically, what the fuck are we doing here? Why are we still here? We're not playing tonight.
And Gary's definitely more of like a sassy old dad grandpa than we like kind of see on TV. So him seeing that was like, yeah, that's that. But all this was so real. And the Mets on their trusty Medium account actually did tweet after the game all the little ways that if you guys were at this game or paid anything for this game, ticket, parking, that you can get a voucher, but you have to go on the website and claim the voucher. So
Medium. Everybody's using Medium, I'm sure, to find out that information.
So on the Mets official Twitter account, I'd probably be like 7-8 tweets back because they finally were tweeting on Thursday because they actually won a game. But
nice.
If you scroll back a little bit, you find the rain out tweet. If you were at this game and you did show up and you did pay for parking, I'm talking about hopefully only like a few hundred of you that may have done that. If you go, you can get a parking voucher for another game and a ticket voucher for another game. It has to be Monday through Thursday, and it can't be against the Yankees. It can't be against the Dodgers. So
that's fine.
It's fine. Keep that in mind. You can get another shot at City Field, and you don't have to pay $40 for parking again, which is ridiculous. But that Gary thing was so perfect because that was like everybody's feeling when they're like, why are they trying to play this game? Yep. Like all these people are showing up to the ballpark and there's no chance they're going to play it. But another cool thing happened during the 2 days of rainouts, which was we did it, Joe. Luis Severino, Zach Shore play was ruled an error. Luis Severino's ERA dropped from 10.8 to 5.4.
Season saved.
Fucking did it. And you know what else happened? I had a tweet the other day that like the Mets had the sixth lowest ERA in Major League Baseball after game one on a Monday. Of all the teams that had like the seven lowest ERAs, the Mets were 0-4 and every other team combined was 21-5.
Saw that, yeah.
With this ERA drop, the Mets ERA dropped to lowest in National League, third lowest in baseball. And then after Thursday, I'm sure it dropped to second or third lowest overall because they still got really good. And it's just, yeah, it's funny. Pitching's been awesome. Pitching's been really awesome early in the season.
So good. That's the frustrating part is the pitching's been so good and the offense, and especially from the guys we expect, has been so bad. Like the approach at the plate genuinely has been one of the worst I've seen. It seems like the Mets take strike one, swing at a bad pitch for strike two, and then it feels like 0-2 every single time for these guys at the top of the order. Like Nimmo has had bad at-bats. I know you said he was walking in the doubleheader today, but he's had some horrendous at-bats. Things that you're not used to seeing from Brandon Nimmo, and Lindor specifically, love Lindor, but these at-bats are like as if he hadn't played baseball in months, as if this was spring training for him.
It's almost worse than that. It's almost like he hasn't played baseball before, which I don't even know how to describe that, but it's just the level of lost.
Does he need contacts or something? Like, I don't know.
It looked like there was a moment in game two where he did lose a contact. He had like stopped the game, like told the umpire, like he was pointing to his eye and he kept like rubbing with his glove. And I'm like, your batting glove's not going to help you put your contact back in. And he wound up just striking out again and three pitches are popping up. Like he's done every single at bat seemingly his entire year, which is fucking brutal. It's like he has to be good. He's too good to be this bad. He makes too much money to be this bad. Like he can't be this bad.
No,
he isn't this bad. He's not this bad. Just not true. But it's also like, can you just be a little better? Then can you just please be a little better? Like I don't know. I really would like you to be a little better. This team will be a lot better if you're a little better. If anybody was hitting like a little bit more, we would have significantly more wins. Significantly. Yes. I'm actually right now I'm reloading up full team chase rate early in the season because I want to see if this approach thing. Everyone's talking about this approach thing. I want to see if it's real.
Okay, it's actually sticky.
Oh, it's super not real. The Mets have one of the lowest chase rates in baseball. Mets chase rate just bottom. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
But you know 11. What it is though? It's because they take strike one. Every single guy is just like, oh, strike one right down the middle. And then they chase on strike two, or they take strike two. Like, I just feel like there is no approach. Maybe the approach isn't necessarily, like, broken in that, like, they're swinging at the wrong pitches, taking the good ones. I just think there is no approach. It feels like there is no plan at the plate for any of these guys outside of Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty, who have clearly had the best at-bats, which feels insane to say on this team.
And just clicking the doubleheader, you felt it so much for Alvarez too, where he comes up early, he gets the first hit for a center of the order. Of course, comes up second time, he gets that two out, two RBI double. We're like, God damn, he's so good. And he's like, he's 18. I think at one point during that game, he was 9-for-18 on the season.
The only person that had a higher OPS than him, I think, in baseball going into the second game of the doubleheader was Mookie Betts. And I don't know if you guys have seen how Mookie Betts has been playing. But it's as if he's not from this planet. Like, he's playing possessed. It's insane.
Mookie has been possessed. There was a time yesterday where he was leading Major League Baseball in every single offensive category, which is insane. I also just, like, sometimes I look at, I don't know. It's dirty talk, but I'm just like, damn, like, Mookie Betts is so good. Like, he's so, good. Like, the team is like, the team needs a shortstop. I'll play shortstop. And you know what I'm going to do? And be really fucking good at it. I think he already has, like, almost 3 WAR in the season. Which means that he's on pace for like 20-something WAR, like an all-time season. So like when we were saying last year, we think he deserved the MVP, like half trying to talk shit about Ronald Acuna, but also half being like, I don't think anybody's better than this guy. It's real. But also I was doing some research on like some Mets actually data, and they've actually been 0-1, very major league average this year. Not more than any other team. Exactly at league average. So the data's not bearing out some of this approach stuff. Some of it feels that way, and I think it's a lot of what that is, just the best players on the team having very bad approaches early, but again, it's like right now we're 0-1 a league average amount, which sucks, but it's also like just be a little better. And then Alvarez, I think, do also got a good heat check in this doubleheader or at least game one of it, because he started off the game so hot. He drove in the 2 runs himself early in the game. And then I think he came around to score in the Brett Beatty RBI single. Yep. So he was responsible in a way for all 3 runs. But then he had a very bad inning behind the plate with Jake Diekman, which we'll talk about again, because this was another weird Carlos Mendoza decision that definitely deserves a little bit of attention. And then he also had a chance to win the game in the ninth inning, just grounded such a bad double play. Yeah. It wasn't like a bad double play, like you ground into a bad double play, but it's just like in that moment, just like, damn it, ground, this is the ground ball. Fuck. Yeah. I really wanted to win this game. But we also got our first taste of the Adrian Hauser experience, and like also just like Sean Manai, pretty good.
Kind of like it. I had a little bit of fun watching Adrian Hauser pitch. You wonder why? He's got a little bit of that Bartolo two-seamer. Like he just, the guy lives on the edges. And that's a fun place to live when you throw 92 miles an hour because you can't really get hurt too bad. And I was talking to my dad on the phone watching the game, and he's like, you know, this Hauser guy, he's like, he doesn't really leave anything over the middle of the plate. Yeah. Like, he's either going to walk you or you're going to, like, hit into soft contact. And then the amount of times you saw guys pull an outside pitch to the shortstop, to Lindor, to Beatty, you're like, fuck, like Adrian Hauser, man, it's not pretty, but boy, I kind of enjoy watching him pitch. Even Ron was, like, kind of gushing. He was like, this reminds me a lot of the guys I played with back in the days. It's a little refreshing. Like someone who's not out there trying to throw 98 every single time. He's like so unimpressive that it's impressive.
No, he stays away from everybody. He doesn't miss any bads. So many two seamers and sinkers, and it's all on the outside. And it's just like, nice. You're never squaring him up. He's not blowing anything by you. He's not missing many bats. But it's a lot of ground balls and a lot of easy pop-ups. And you're like, this is nice to watch. I like this. And then you definitely don't want that experience to happen three times around the batting order, though. And that's why he did get pulled when he got pulled, which was, I think, it might have been a hair early, but also the Tigers had this spot in their batting order where it was some impressive lefties in a row with Parker Meadows 1, Kerry Carpenter 3, and Riley Green 4, which is, I know maybe to some Mets fans that doesn't exactly sound like murderer's row, but those are three like pretty above average left-handed hitters. So like if you have multiple lefties in your bullpen, it's a good time to use them against that. So he was yanked for Brooks Raley in the sixth inning with Carpenter Riley coming up. The Tigers responded by pinch hitting, taking Carpenter out of the game, which, again, that's a win for the Mets. That's a good time bringing the lefty, get Kerry Carpenter out of the game. He's a really good hitter for, I believe it was Andy Ibañez, who did, I think, wind up getting a hit and a run wound up scoring in this situation. But I understand Carlos Mendoza and the Mets not wanting Hauser to see these guys a third time. But then that part of the lineup came up again, and now we only have a lefty 1 and a lefty 4. And I think Mendoza got a little bit jumpy because Drew Smith next inning got into trouble in the 7th after 2 quick outs, the Drew Smith special. And then Jake Diekman comes in to face Parker Meadows, the first of those lefties. But Mark Hanna is sitting on the bench, and he's gotten into every game this series. And this was a nice comeback from Mark Hanna with Mets fans, because we can all remember him like working a nice 7-pitch walk, getting hit with a 1-2 pitch right in the ass. It's like, oh yeah, Mark Hanna is a good baseball player. I remember now hitting a fly ball just to the warning track, not getting all the way out. Like, this is awesome. I think Mark Hanna also might have had the fewest ever games played for a player to get a tribute video at an opposing stadium.
It's close.
He was maybe a 220 game player as a Met, and he got like a 45-second tribute video before the game, which is like, that was crazy to me, but it was also a nice thing. But he pinch hits for Meadows, and then pass ball, walk, another wild pitch. This was where Alvarez, this was kind of like the heat check, where it's like, that was not getting behind the plate. It was also the Jake Diekman experience for Mets fans. You guys got a good taste of that, where it's very uncomfortable for the hitter. It's very uncomfortable for Diekman. It's uncomfortable for the fielder. It's uncomfortable for the fans watching at home. It's uncomfortable for everybody because the ball leaves his hand, and it could be the best pitch you've ever seen, or it could be 3 feet above the catcher. I don't know what's going to happen next. But Diekman comes in this game, and he faces 0 lefties eventually. He gets out of the inning, gives up the 1 run. So now we're up 3-2. And then he doesn't come back the next inning, where Riley Green, the actual best hitter, the best lefty in this lineup, is in the game. Adam Ottavino throws a sweeper over the middle, and Riley Green hits to the moon. Suddenly it's 3-3.
Yeah, there's no world. I mean, I thought we were past this. I thought we learned last year. I thought we learned in 2022. Adam Ottavino cannot face left-handed hitters. It is not something he can do. And guess what? If he is, it's got to be a 2-3-4-run game. It can't be with a chance to tie it up. And especially when you had Diekman in before, why is he not in to just get Riley Green out? I don't understand. I couldn't rationalize the move at all. I also felt like he came in a little bit early. Like, we decided we like Jake Diekman against Parker Meadows more when Mark Hanna is coming in, rather than Jake Diekman to get Riley Green. That one also didn't make sense to me. Maybe that's some Monday morning quarterback, a little bit of we saw what happened, and we have a more sane take on it now because we saw the outcome. But at the same time, Parker Meadows doesn't instill the same fear that Riley Green should, even if he is an okay hitter.
You meant Drew Smith against Riley.
Parker Meadows. Yes. I thought it should have been Drew Smith against Parker Meadows. Drew Smith also, like, I know he got into his, like, the classic Drew Smith 2 quick outs, then got into trouble, but it was like a blue pit, and he got squeezed on one of the other batters where, like, he genuinely threw like 4 strikes in that at bat, didn't get a single one over because of Angel Hernandez behind the plate in game 1 of that doubleheader. Legend back there, 3 blind mice, and it's all Angel Hernandez. But Mendoza definitely has not been sharp. And you guys know that I loved Luis Rojas. I'm always going to have Luis Rojas's back. Carlos Mendoza is what all Mets fans thought Luis Rojas was when it came to making decisions. Where Luis Rojas, like, at the end of the day, I really don't think was still that bad. Not the point of conversation. Carlos Mendoza has not really seemed to get the feel of the game just yet either. Like, how the game feels, the speed, the decision-making. It all seems like he's just a little bit behind, and I was really hoping this is where John Gibbons would have been able to, like, help out a little bit more of, like, hey, dummy, no, not right now. This is not when we do this. Please, God, no. Doesn't seem like that's the case.
Yeah, I almost have to give a little bit of these bad decisions to John Gibbons as well, because it's like, ugh. And all, you've been in Major League Clubhouse. You've been a Major League manager before, and you kind of have felt some nerves for Mendoza.
A little bit.
The way he's talking to the media, the way he looks at the top step. I understand that. It's your first week as being a big league manager, and you are losing every single game in horrible, horrible fashion. So I can't like fault him for kind of feeling like a little deer in the headlights a little bit at times, but also like, please be a little bit better. And then, yeah, you have a Major League bench coach sitting right next to you. You have a guy in Eric Chavez, who was a Major League bench coach last year, standing right behind you. Those three are a little triumvirate every single game where it's like, can somebody do something? And something we gave Buck a lot of shit last couple of years because he was a bad manager. But the one thing he did really well that I was impressed with is that if there was a situation where better hitters were coming up in the eighth inning, he did not hesitate to use Edwin Diaz there. And this situation where you've burned both your lefties, it just had to be Edwin Diaz facing Riley Greene, unless Jake Diekman was coming back out. Maybe Diekman's like an up-down thing. Like, he's not a reliever who often goes more than one inning.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure he's not. Shout out Joe Musgrove the other day, because Josh Hader, in his entire two-year stint with the Padres, he never got a four-out save in the regular season. He got one in the postseason. Robert Suarez and Gardy's two, four, or five-out saves this year. He's like, it's really nice to have a reliever who's not scared to take the ball whenever we ask him, because Josh Hader was like, I'm not doing four outs. I'm going one inning, it's going to be the ninth. That was like a thing. So, yeah, cool that Joe Musgrove said that. It was hilarious. Even though Musgrove hated to get a four-out save in the playoffs. So, I was going to tweet it, and I looked back. I was like, oh, I actually do remember. He got this big four-out save against the Dodgers in the LDS. Like, I'm not going to shit on this guy for not getting four-out saves when he actually did one of them that mattered most. But it just, of all the machinations that happen in a baseball game, to be like, I want my right-handed reliever who throws a sweeper to face Riley Greene, the only guy in this Tigers line who could really kill me, because Torkelson doesn't really look like him right now. It was stupid. And I tweeted it because, like, it looked like it was a pitch off a tee. Alex Chamberlain, great writer, Fangraphs, he co-tweeted it. He, like, put some good data about how often hitters pull fly balls against sweepers, like, up against every pitch. And lefties pull fly balls against right-handed sweepers, like, 15% of the time. Smashed every other metric on the table. It was a good tweet. And I was just like, yeah, that's exactly what happened too, huh? But it's just so many machinations as bullpen. There's so many people to use. And it's just the way that jumping in the sixth, jumping in the seventh, fucks you for the eighth. It wasn't being thought out. And then the decision making, I think, got a little bit worse, but I think this was the worst one. Because extra innings, after a great shutdown inning by Jorge Lopez, the Mets are up in the bottom of the 10th, need one run to win the game. And this is an anti-bunting podcast. We have been since the beginning of time. But we've said, I guess more me, the only time in a Major League Baseball game now, the way it's currently stated, where bunting makes sense, is when you're the bottom of an inning, you need exactly one run to win, and you have a man at second base and nobody out. That's the only time the math says that the bunting makes sense. But Carlos Mendoza tried to ask Brett Beatty to bunt, and it super didn't work.
Yeah, the problem I had with there, again, I hate the bunt, whatever. And I side with the people on Twitter too, being like, Brett Beatty's been one of our better hitters. Why the fuck is he bunting right now? Give him a chance to win the game. If you're going to go with the bunt there, there is a guy on the bench by the name of Joseph Wendell who should be in and bunting in that situation, because clearly Brett Beatty is not comfortable bunting. That was blatantly obvious by the awful, awful attempts he made. And you know what? I don't really care that Brett Beatty can't bunt. Doesn't bother me. Not moved in the slightest. But if that was the decision that you were going to make, it has to be Joey Wendell. Why the fuck is this guy on this team if he's not going to be doing the Joey Wendell shit that you would expect him for? So that was the frustrating part for me, was you had your guy to do the job that you wanted, and you chose not to because you wanted Brett Beatty to bunt? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Also, because Mendoza wasn't really afraid to take good players out of the game, because Francisco Alvarez, like we said, made the last out in the ninth inning. He was the ghost runner on second base, and they pinch ran him for, I believe it was Zach Short. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're willing to take Francisco Alvarez out of the game, that means in your head you're like, we're ending this game right now.
Yes.
You should be able to do the same for Brett Beatty. Or, again, just let Brett Beatty hit, because he's been hitting so well. Timely hits, he's been taking good at bats. Like, I completely understand the bunt decision, But in the moment after that first bunt attempt was so off.
So bad.
And I think it was, I think this was either still Jason Foley or Shelby Miller, but just a reliever who was getting on you. It's just a bad time to bunt.
It was Shelby.
And it was Shelby. It was just Shelby. What a name for a reliever. Jason and Shelby. But it's like the picky fucking blindness. But it was just bad. And he got a lot of shit for it because there's this anti-bunting constituency who I think most of them used to be the pro-bunting constituency. And then it's ironic that in game two, a bunt like kind of won the Mets the game after the Brett Beatty walk. Starting Marte pushed a bunt up the first baseline perfectly so well. No, again, you guys talk shit about me.
That's good at bunting.
Like, good bunting. But it was painful just that. Because like the other part of me is like major league players should get that bunt down. Yes. That bunt should have gotten down. Shelby Miller is a good reliever, but he doesn't throw 99. He doesn't throw 100 miles an hour. Like, the bunts should get down. Like, he throwing high pitches and the bunts were missing. So that's just good pitching. It's good, just tip your cap, good baseball. But it's just, you got to get that bunt down. But when, as a manager, you have to know, you have to put your players in position to do things good. And I will say, like, maybe, like, Brett Beatty has shown bunt to get hits a few times. He did one in spring training, too. That was good. He did it a few times last year. He tried it a few times this year. I wouldn't tell Brett Beatty never try this again because, like, it's not worth it anymore. But, like,
yeah.
Maybe he's not even that bad at it. He just kind of flubbed in the moment. And then his manager took the heat for him. Like, that might be something that happened.
Maybe.
Because like, the concept of the decision, again, anti-bunting podcast, that's the one time you're supposed to bunt. That's the one time it ever makes sense. I need one run to win this game. It's out. Does not matter. And it worked. And you know what? We bunted. It fucking worked in game two. That was our first win of the season. So I get that. Maybe we should be a little more nice to the bunting. But isn't because then you get to the 11th inning. Tonkin comes in for another extra inning extravaganza. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Cole Keith in the gap. You have no chance. Game's over.
Fucking misery. Sleeper cell. Guy's yeah. A brave sleeper cell right now. He's just like, how can the Mets lose? How can I help them lose this game?
Michael Tonkin shouldn't be pitching with a ghost runner at second base. It shouldn't be happening. We use seven relievers.
Never
this game.
Again.
Like,
never
just, again. Just the fact that it happened back-to-back games, that's, again, also malpractice, where it's like, how did we get into this situation? Like, what was that show? Like, on Nickelodeon, where like it was a rewind, like, stop. You might be wondering how I got here. It should be like that every single time Michael Tonkin is in the game in extra innings. You might be wondering how I got here, because I don't know how the fuck I'm here. I don't know why I'm here.
Yeah, I think Michael Tonkin was definitely catching a lot of heat, not his fault, but he also didn't do anything to win the game. That's also part of it. And that goes back to the conversation we had in the last episode of every other team's players step up. When are the Mets players going to step up? That's what we missed. And to be fair, in game two, despite getting no hit for what, seven innings, we did see Pete Alonso step up in the ninth inning, hit that big home run. And then the other guys then stepped up too. Brett Beatty with a huge walk, like you said, Starling Marte, Tyrone Taylor, who needs to be playing every single day over Harrison Bader. He has to be. He's just way better. I don't care how good Harrison Bader is in the field. Right now at the plate, he is as good as Meir James if you're going up there. So you can't have that. You can't have Mark and James up at the plate right now.
You're saying that, but he did break the Mets' 13 no-hit innings.
Oh, cool, dude. Wow, yeah. Sick. Nice blue.
Wow,
brother.
Dude. Cool, man.
You play for the Mets, dude? Wow, it's great. Drop me off in Midtown, bro.
If Ed Cranepool picked them up at the airport, they'd say, "Hey, dude, what's your name? Can you take me to Midtown? You played for the Mets? That's cool, man. When did you play for the Mets? That's awesome, dude. They killed Gil Hodges. Nothing's good."
But I also love that this is something that I said in the show. I said on Twitter a few times, the Mets signed Harrison Bader. Everyone's like, Harrison Bader is a starting center fielder. I was like, you guys not watch Harrison Bader hit.
Correct.
Watch Harrison Bader hit for 2 weeks. This guy's not going to have more than 300 to 400 plate appearances because he can't. He just can't.
Let me ask you this. Why in the world did they pay him $10 million?
It seemed like that was the going rate at the time. But then
he got
we've
cut
seen
last year.
We've seen this offseason, the Mets and other teams. It seemed like the people who were proactive got boned.
Yeah.
And the people who waited got saved, because I think it was the Pirates signed Michael Taylor for like a couple mil.
Yeah.
I was saying since October is better than Harrison Bader. I would like to have him on this team. And also we see a guy like Joey Wendell seems like a great guy. Seems like a ball player. But to jump the whole market and give him $3 million guaranteed. And we got to talk about the other thing that happened in the middle of doubleheader. Julio Teheran.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's making $2 million.
Why did they sign him for money?
I don't know. Because in this game, I
should be paying the Mets to play baseball.
They talk about sleeper cell. I actually think he might be a sleeper cell, but I'll save that conspiracy for another podcast.
You know when they think he's going to make his debut for the Mets?
When?
Saturday. Against the fucking Braves.
Yeah, Monday.
I know. He's a sleeper cell.
Because there is the rule, though, that Jose Blue got to start this game because of doubleheader. You get 27th man. But you can't call guys up who've been optioned for 10 days unless there's an injury that goes with it, which we're so ready for the Reed Garrett phantom injury. Like, thank you for having the game of your life, pitching three shutout innings and saving us to get a win. We'll talk about him in a second because I love Reed Garrett now, but like, here's your reward. You're going to the minor leagues. You're going to make 40K for this next couple, you're going to 40K pay your salary for the next few weeks again. But Tehran, I don't know. I just don't know. It was like a weird thing where they had to get a guy because they couldn't call up any of the minor leaguers for until next Friday, but it's also $2 million. $2 million seemed like a lot. I would have given him $20 and been like, can you just shell this one game and just deal with it? Like, I did look at Spotrac because I was just like, $2 million. Like, that's the lowest salary by far for any starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And like, he did have a stretch last year where he wasn't like horrible.
Sure.
But also, I don't think he's going to be good. But I guess we'll talk about that when it happens. I'm going to pretend Julio Tehran is not
doesn't
on this
exist
team until he actually has to be on this team.
Yeah.
Doesn't exist until he exists. But I want to talk about Budo for a second, because Jose Budo was put in a very difficult situation to start game two, his doubleheader, where the Mets are starting here in a 5-game losing streak. They'd burned 7 relievers in game one, and they were like, hey, you got to save us. You, the guy who didn't make our baseball team, please save us right now. Someone should have sent an apology letter that Tyler McGill made this team over Jose Budo, because he did so much after the game. During this game, 30 pitch first inning where he really struggled. He had no feel. The fastball was running a lot. He couldn't place it, and he just didn't have any feel for the cutter or the slider, which have been his two best pitches since he developed them both towards the end of last season. And then he just got so tough, and he just did everything he could. He's like, I'm not coming out of this game. He's like, I'm throwing 6 innings if you have to drag me off this field. And he only gave up 1 run, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks, a couple hits, but only the 1 run, the 6 strikeouts. And he was literally only throwing 4 seamers, 2 seamers, and changeups. And he just kept them off balance. He stayed on the edges of the plate, low, high, inside, outside, where players couldn't really hurt him. And like, he couldn't have any feel for the breaking ball, and he was still getting guys out. The slider and the cutter were barely used. Savant said the slider's a sweeper or and a curveball, mix of the two. I don't know, it was weird. And then that the cutter was a slider, but I think, again, just knowing how those pitchers were being classified in spring, I think that's a slider and a cutter. And he really just leaned on the other stuff because he couldn't have any grip for those. He only wound up throwing 2 cutters, and like, 2 of them were really nice to lefties. I think one was to I don't remember if it was Meadows, if it was Green, but 2 of them he was just burying on the inside. So I was like, throw that pitch more. Please throw that pitch more. But it was just like, he sprinkled a few in random innings, but it was just fastball, sinker, changeup, fastball, sinker, changeup over and over again, which is how he got to the major leagues, which when you have no stuff, you're always going to lean on the stuff that is your stuff. So just, I really want to see him get more chances because like, he has such a good attitude on the mound. He throws so many strikes, just like, it was fucking awesome to see him do this. Because if he didn't do this, if he took a 30-pitch first inning and turned that into a 60-pitch first 2 innings,
death.
The Mets would have lost this game. Because this would have been 8 innings of Johan Ramirez and Reed Garrett, and it would have been very bad.
Yeah, I mean, to use a classic like baseball cliche here, gutsy performance from Jose Budo. I didn't get to watch it live. Your boy was out on a date. But gutsy performance by Jose Budo. Absolutely just bulldogged it a little bit. Like you said, he didn't have the stuff, was able to get through that 6, and then talk about bulldog performance too. Your boy Reed Garrett. Now is when we can salute Reed Garrett for his service. I mean, 3 innings, 3 Ks I think he had, maybe a hit, maybe a walk here and there. I don't know the exact stats. But I even got a text from my dad after the game. He was like, I know you were busy, you couldn't watch this. He was like, but Reed Garrett, where'd this guy come from? 95 with the splitter. I'm like, he was here last year. He's had it all the time. He just saw it now and it worked. Like, but yeah, huge, especially because the offense didn't exist for the entire game, pretty much.
It's funny. I tried to say that last year, and you were like, shut up. Don't make Reed Garrett a thing. And I was
you're
like,
you're right. But he showed me today.
He was throwing 96. And he used 5 different pitches in this game today, which I think is how a guy like Reed Garrett gets through 3 innings. He used a 4-seamer, he used a 2-seamer, he used a gyro slider, he used a sweeper, and he was dropping a splitter. And he used each of those pitches at least 15% of the time, where it's like, does Reed Garrett want to go back to AAA and try to start? Like, does he want to try and stretch out to 50 pitches? Like, I'd rather him start than Julio Tehran, but gutsy performance by him. We definitely want to come up with like a segment in this show. We're trying to do more segments and stuff because we've got to be like podcasters now. Instead of just like showing up and doing a podcast, trying to actually be podcasters, we need a name for like the shitty hero of the week, the guy who like you didn't expect to do a good thing.
Because Seymour Wiener of the week.
Yeah, like we wanted to make a playoff.
Seymour Stars.
Yeah, we want to do a playoff like the zeal of approval, because like that's what Reed Garrett was. Like, the Mets do not win this game if Reed Garrett gives up even 1 run. If Reed Garrett, the guy who's a major league journeyman, has been DFA'd multiple times the last few years, he gives up 1 run to a major league baseball team, the Mets lose. We're 0-6 right now going on the road. If the Mets were 0-6 going to Cincinnati, where they always struggle, well, not always struggle, but it's chaos baseball, we don't know what's going to happen. there was an outside chance to be 0-9 heading to Atlanta next week. If the Mets were 0-9 heading to Atlanta, I was never coming back to America. I was not going to talk about baseball anymore. I was going to retire.
So that thing,
yeah, the Mets saved me. I was going to just stay in Morocco. I don't know what was going to happen. Spain, maybe. I'll just find my home in Spain. I can blend in really well down there. My Spanish is pretty good. I could live down there for a couple $100 a month, and you would never hear from me again. Never, ever. But thank God this happened, because we got to the ninth inning, and Pete hits a home run on a pitch that's almost in the dirt. He put a half swing on it. The ball went off his bat, and my dad and I are just like watching. We're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, fuck yes. It seemed like the whole team was so happy. Then we talked about before the big Brett Beatty walk off, the two awful calls, and then Tyron Taylor being the hero. And we just, I'm not going to say we saved the season, because we're still 1-5. The team still looks horrifically bad, but it saved the moment for us at least. Saved the weekend, saved April.
I think I saw a tweet that there's only been 3 or 4 teams in the history of baseball that have started the year 0-5 and made the playoffs. So there's quite a hill to jump here.
But new playoff system now. 15 of those teams have gotten to 84 wins. So I don't know.
New playoff. We could
do it.
Mets got to rattle off 83 wins out of their next, you know, whatever amount of games. There's so many games left. But yeah,
it's April.
It looked very cathartic, the way that the Mets won this game. Like, you saw Pete Alonso hit the home run. You saw the guys in the dugout, Pete running around the bases, almost like I needed this. Like a lot of like yelling of like letting demons out. And then when they won the game, Pete being the goofball that he is, like chasing Tyron Taylor down on the bases, throwing shit at him. Kind of same thing of like, like they just needed to get it out. I don't know. Maybe the Mets need to like yell before the games, like just be in the locker room and just start screaming and yelling and getting stuff out. But it felt like a moment where they were able to shake everything off, realize, oh shit, that's right, we are good baseball players. We're not a terrible, terrible team like we've been playing. Hopefully this is what can turn this around going into Cincinnati.
I think that's probably exactly what Pete Alonso sounds like when he yells too. But it felt good. It felt like they were happy to win a game. Of course, they're happy to win a game. Carlos Mendoza said that when he got to the clubhouse after, he was greeted with beer, champagne, and eggs, which I don't know who in the Mets clubhouse had eggs handy, but it's a funny answer.
All right, let's play a game. Who in the clubhouse, who of the Mets players would you suspect to be an eggs man? Like just have eggs ready to go. Who's your pick? Harrison Bader, you think's the egg guy. Why? Just he's protein? The egg man. Just...
Yeah, he just has protein around. He always has a couple eggs handy.
I don't know who I'd go with. I don't know why Francisco Alvarez feels like he just pops some eggs. Like he just like kind of like, yeah, like eggs in his pocket, eggs in his locker, like in a little Tupperware, and you just eat a hard-boiled egg like for a snack in between innings.
Strong boy. Francisco Alvarez also probably is most likely in this roster to have grown up around chickens, so I think that's probably part of it. Also, shout out Steve Gelbs, because we got Tyron Taylor got the Gatorade bath after the game, and he blew it so bad. He was asking Tyron Taylor questions, but he saw the Mets doing like the Gatorade bath from like 40 yards away, like running from there all the way to the home plate where he's doing the interview. And then like 20 seconds of silence, just like this. And then he goes, oh, I think I'm going to get out of the way. Tyron Taylor goes, what? And he turns around, Gatorade bath. So it's like, all right, nice. Shout out awkward Steve Gelbs there for that one. But thank God we won this game. We still lost the series, but like, thank God you get a win. Like first one's the hardest to go through. Sometimes usually the Mets just do this on opening day. It's weird the Mets go this long without a win. And the 0-5 is the worst they've been. I think it was since 64, tied with 2005, which was also the first year that Willie Randolph managed the team, which is kind of ironic. That was a funny one. For another ex-Yankee getting his first managerial job. But I don't know. It's still pretty bad, but it's not as bad as I felt in between these two games.
Yeah, between game one and game two was, again, on my way to go into my date. And I tweeted out, I was like, I don't know how the hell I'm going to watch this team for the entire year. I'm like, I have no clue because
dramatic.
I'm in such a bad mood right now, and I am being dramatic, super dramatic, but it was just like, I was so perturbed by how they lost game one, SAT word of the day, perturbed, that I couldn't handle it. I was like, if I have to watch 150 more games of them playing baseball like this, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to rip out the hair from my head. Like, there's no way. I can't do it.
I was in like a bar and a restaurant with my family watching this game. So I even texted you in the middle because like I lost my stream and LBTV. Yeah. I was like, I lost my stream. I can't watch anything right now. I'm on game day. And that's when that Deekman inning happened. I'm texting you like, is this inning as bad as it looks on the app? You were like, it's pretty bad. But so like my sister was a little frustrated for a little bit. I'm watching the Mets. I'm like, I got to watch the team. She's like, all right, it's fine. And then she's watching it too. And the whole family's like huddled around my iPhone watching the Mets. And then we just stumbled upon like a dream restaurant for me, a full gluten-free restaurant in Italy. Nice. And it was so fucking good. We were in pasta. I was having toast and bread. I was just going off. But it was like, once this whole thing happened in the ninth and 10th inning, I got really hot. Like, I got red. I was like, I gotta walk outside. And I was just standing. I was standing on the street after the Mets blew this game, like in Italy, just being like, I just can't go back in. I can't go back in there. I was wearing like two. I was like a sweater and a shirt. Like, I took the sweater off and it was like 50 degrees. I was wearing a short sleeve shirt, like pacing around the street. I was like, I can't. This team is making me feel really like shit right now. It's making me feel really bad. I can't be in there around these people.
It was bad. But again, thank God they won. Now we have the Red Series coming up here. Go ahead and do our quick little series preview going up against the old Cincinnati Reds. And they're not the Cincinnati Reds of the past. This is a very good Cincinnati Reds team that will beat the Mets if they do not play good baseball. 4-2, I believe, going into the series. What are our pitching matchups looking like there, James?
Pitching matchups for the series, the Mets, I think, again, similar to missing Tarik Skubal, are getting a bit lucky, even though this Reds rotation is strange right now. We're missing the ace of all aces, Frankie Montas. Friday, 6:40 p.m. game. Set your clocks for that one. Jose Quintana versus Hunter Green. You guys have heard me wax poetic about Hunter Green in the show before. He's like if Spencer Strider didn't have a publicist and had a much worse home park and a much worse team behind him. Because he's throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, breaking off sliders, new splitter, new curveball. He's a very good pitcher. He's a good pitcher more so, again, but like, in theory than on the field right now, because the things he does are disgusting, but he's found ways to always get hit. And then Saturday, I'm doing math right now. Okay, so there's a 4:10 game on the 6-hour time difference in my ESPN and my internet. I'm doing this podcast in the morning. Mark's doing it in the middle of the night, which is fun wrinkle for the show.
3 a.m.
Yeah, for me, 9:23. Luis Severino versus Nick Martinez. Nick Martinez, converted reliever to a starter. He's been fine. You could definitely hit him, especially in Cincinnati. And then Sunday, Sean Manaea versus Andrew Abbott. Andrew Abbott burst ace on the off. Scene last year. Andrew Abbott's not an ace. He's not even close. I think the Mets could really rip Martinez and Abbott off. This is we've seen this in the past with the Mets. You go to Cincinnati, this is where cold bats go to get hot. This is where hot pitching goes to get cold. And I feel like, especially going to Atlanta after, I'm scared this is exactly what's going to happen to this Mets team. We're going to be able to just mistime everything. But
yeah.
I'll take that just for the offense to come around. And I talk shit about the schedule a lot. Cincinnati Reds are coming off a series where they beat the Phillies. Talk about the ace off. Frankie Montas versus Zach Wheeler a couple nights ago. I watched that 2:00 in the morning in Italy because I'm a sick freak. Frankie Montas goes toe-to-toe, Zach Wheeler beats him. I got flamed by Mets fans for saying, I want Frankie Montas in this team. I said Frankie Montas by a lot over Lucas Giolito. People said I was an idiot. People didn't see the vision. Not true, because they're awesome. But the Reds to start the season, Nationals, Phillies, Mets. Why are the Reds home and away just playing NL East teams to start the season?
Oh, no. No clue.
Whoever that 75-year-old couple is that makes Major League Baseball
schedule. No, they don't do it anymore.
No, I'm making the joke, yeah. They bring them back because whatever computer program is making the schedule fucking sucks. The Mets are in three series in a row, Central teams. Wow. Why is this? And then five out of our first six series, just with the Braves sprinkled in, Central teams. Stupid as hell, but this Reds team is fun. I want you to talk about some of the hitters right now, and it's just going to be bandbox baseball on Cincy.
Yeah, you got Ellie De La Cruz. He's obviously the most exciting player, I think, on this team. He hasn't been particularly playing well to start the year, but he just has the ability to put up four home runs in this series like it's absolutely nothing. He does struggle from the right-hand side. He's a switch hitter, does not see lefties well, might not even necessarily play when Quintana's on the mound or Manaea necessarily. He didn't play last year when the Mets had lefties on the mound, so something to keep an eye out for. Jonathan India could be a trade piece at some point by the Cincinnati Reds. He's playing some good baseball. And then you have Spencer Steer, who's a good hitter. Christian Encarnacion Strand is a young rookie who's got some crazy power, not playing well, good power though. Will Benson, Jake Fraley, Nick Martini. Get used to hearing those names because none of them are particularly good, but they're all going to be really annoying and they're going to play well.
I'll say this. I agree with you on Martini, but Benson and Fraley are Major League Baseball players. Like, they're the kind of player that you'll never respect, but I love.
Correct. They exist in a vacuum of they work perfectly in Cincinnati because they can hit the ball soft and get home runs, but you put them on the 29 other teams in Major League Baseball and they probably don't start.
Again, Will Benson, I think, will, because Will Benson has done something where the Cleveland Guardians are becoming the new St. Louis Cardinals, where if an outfielder leaves their organization, they become superstars. And I'm being hyperbolic. Will Benson's not a superstar, but his only problem, because he's like a big physical dude. He was a high draft pick, major power, major physical tools, fast. His whole thing was just, I'm swinging at every single pitch. And now he doesn't do that anymore. He stopped chasing as much, and he makes crazy contact still. He's awesome. He's a good baseball player. He's going to hit a home run this series, book it, guarantee it. But this Reds team, they throw a lot of shit at the wall hitting because they know they can. And then the pitching is kind of like what they can get out of it. Fernando Cruz has had a really good year to open the bullpen for the Reds. Alexis Diaz has struggled a bit out of the gate. This bullpen is it's very gettable. Starting rotation is very gettable, what they have right now. It's just like, let's, if you guys score six runs, probably the winning game Cincinnati, though. So I think this Mets offense, if they're actually, if Francisco Lindor plays well, can actually do that. And it's just, I would like them to do that.
Yeah, it would be really, really nice to just see some home runs from guys not named Pete Alonso. That would be fun.
Yeah, and I think that's good for the Reds preview. But we told you guys, now one day a week, we're going to give you guys a shit take of the week. And we had a few for this episode, but we're going to save them, I think, because briefly we want to do some prospect stuff. Just want to talk about Christian Scott. He made his debut for AAA Syracuse yesterday and was fucking disgusting. He had 19 swings and misses in only four innings with 9 strikeouts. He gave 3 earned runs. He got hit up a little bit. Got some hard contact against him, but amazing fastballs up in the zone, great sliders and sweepers, look down. He was really burying his, again, I'm a sicko. I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning watching Christian Scott pitch in Italy on the MILB TV app. He was really doing a good job. This is the Yankees AAA team, Scranton Wilkes-Barre, doing a really good job against lefties, burying that like little tight slider he has like on the hands to lefties while dropping the sweepers on their feet and doing all that on the outside to right-handed batter. So good outing for Christian Scott, gave up some runs, but I think this is a situation where some of the most pitches in minor leagues, results matter far less than what you're doing with pitches. And he was doing 45% fastballs, 30% gyros, and like 15% sweepers and changeups. So working on that sweeper, make sure he could throw that, working on that changeup, make sure he could throw that pitch to lefties, and just like kind of just inundating minor league hitters with velocity. Cause like we talked about in the show, if you throw 95 in AAA, like you're going to murder AAA hitters. And then the Yankees did make some good contact. Again, had some good hard contact, but got swings and misses using all four pitches. Good stuff. And also, as we're starting that year in Syracuse, so ironic because how bad this Mets team is hitting. Luis Angel Acuna and Drew Gilbert, first week of the season, really bad. Not doing anything. Both striking out, no power from either of them. Mark Vientos is carrying that Syracuse lineup right now, so they've actually had a good start to the season. But that's where we're at. And Jose Iglesias, of course, taking the strong spring the up king. to the great white north.
Yeah, no, with Christian Scott, too, there's been a little bit of buzz, especially from the SNY booth, of like, maybe Christian Scott should be getting a look here when we have these pitchers going down like Tyler McGill. Like, is this the Christian Scott time? Every start that he has that continues to look good is one more start closer to him coming up to the major league level. And it seems like we will be seeing him in no time as long as he continues.
And again, pitching this Mets team right now is not the problem.
Not the problem.
Right? Next time we talk to you guys, it might be the problem.
It could be.
Right now, April 5th, it is not the problem. So we can hang our hats on that.
Wait, also, the McGill family, tough weekend. Did you see what happened to Trevor?
No.
Oh, my God. So Tyler McGill obviously didn't pitch well, got hurt, shoulder MRI, whatever was going on with him, shoulder inflammation. Trevor got food poisoning one of the days in New York City, went back to Milwaukee after feeling terrible from the food poisoning, went to a phone store, passed out in the phone store, hit his head, concussion, IL. Tough weekend for the McGills.
Shut up. The 6 hour time there, I'm missing so much good baseball news. Cause I just wake up and try to grab it, and it's like not there.
All 6'8" of him. He could have gotten seriously hurt. The guy's in a store and passes out because he was so weak from the food poisoning in New York.
That's funny. I had a funny pass out story with my life one time. Not me, but one of my friends, Chet Upri, college. We just like become friends, and it was like Sunday hungover, like go to Chipotle. And it was like one of the first times we ever like hung out and like got food like in a group of people, and she just passed out in the Chipotle.
Nice.
Like just crumpled. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And she, 2 seconds later, just woke up. She's like, oh my God, just dehydration. But yeah, passing out, scary thing. I hope Trevor's
I did
okay.
Yeah, did it back in January when I was getting my infusion for Crohn's disease. I decided, you know what would be a good idea? To not eat food or drink anything until 4 o'clock when I'm getting my infusion. The guy puts in the needle to my arm, or the IV to my arm, missed my vein, told me I missed. I could feel that he missed. And I went, ooh, don't feel great. And then apparently I just put my head down, passed out. And then he shook me and I woke up like, what happened? He's like, you passed out. I was like, oh, I'm sweaty. I'm so warm right now. Like, this is terrible. Bad feeling. No fun.
Passing out's not fun. Shout out to McGill family. Trevor couldn't have passed out game 1 of that series, though. Definitely not. Of course not. No. I couldn't have passed out on the off day there. But all right. No worries. Good episode. Good episode.
Good episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Remember to follow us on all our social media at MetsUp. We just put out our first piece of content in my life that's got 1 million views. Super proud of it. The Robin Ventura rain delay TikTok got 1.1 million views in like 48 hours, which is just fucking stupid. It is dumb that it got that many. But hey, shout out you guys. We appreciate it. We're almost up to like 5,500 followers on Instagram. Can't figure out for the life of me how to get people to watch on TikTok. But boy, oh boy, do the boys know how to cook on Instagram. So make sure you're following us on all the social media there. Metsed Up. If you want to see the YouTube version of what we're talking about here, Metsed Up Podcast, go search it up on YouTube. You'll be able to find us there. And if you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Odyssey, drop us a rating, drop us a review. We have some shout outs here. I actually know
We have a couple reviews in, so I'm going to read them right now. Nice. Hopefully you've made it this far to the end of the episode, but we do have a couple new reviews coming in. First one from Augustus Octavius. I mean, that's an insane name.
That's awesome.
But I
love in Italy.
It. Yes, he says, love these guys. Perfect balance of new baseball with the stats, development, analytics mixed with the old school baseball with the vibes. Jinx is dogging him. I'm in my mid-30s, so I learn a lot of new phrases from these guys, too. Disgusting. This kid might be a guy, etc. Keep it up, guys. This is my new go-to Mets show. And shameless plug, since this might be read on the show, shout out to a book I'm getting published called How to Start a War if you're into World War II stuff. Gotta grind. Yeah. You guys inspire me. So shout out, Augustus. We do appreciate you leaving that review. And then we got one more.
Don't
from
say the name.
The weather penis thing. 2 years ago, my doorman. Is this Ernie, by the way?
It might be Ernie.
Okay, might be Ernie. 2 years ago, my doorman, who was a fellow Mets fan, suggested I watch Giraffe Neck Mark on YouTube. I thought the name was kind of cringe, so never did. Fast forward, and I've been listening to every episode of Mets Up and really enjoying. I don't know until three episodes in that this was the same Mark. Prejudice equals squashed. Great pod, LFGM. That's what makes me think it's not Ernie.
It's definitely not Ernie. It might be the same building, though.
Yeah, the Weathercock. That's quite the name. You know who you are. Appreciate you for leaving that review.
Shout out that doorman. We got to get that doorman of a care package or something.
Helping us. Definitely, for sure. But guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Peace out.
See you guys next time.